This is Mark Wilkes. I will be chairing the TCC this afternoon. Pam Bernard sends her regrets, but she is on vacation today. So we will just move ahead. The first item on the agenda is approval of agenda. Are there any comments or needed changes to the agenda as posted? Okay, hearing none, can I get a motion to approve the agenda as submitted?
I'm making a motion, Mr. Trent.
Okay, and everyone, please, when you make a motion, just remember to state your name for the benefit of the meeting hosts that cannot see you. Thank you very much. Trent, is there a second?
Leanne, I'll second.
Okay, the motion has been made and seconded. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Okay, and for the good of the order, if there's anyone opposed, please signify by saying so now. Hearing none opposed, the agenda stands as submitted. The first action item on the agenda is approval of the December 9th, 2021 Quorum POTCC committee meeting minutes. Has everyone had a chance to review the minutes? Are there any questions, comments, or corrections to the minutes? Okay, hearing none, can I get a motion to approve the minutes as submitted?
This is Kayla, so moved.
Thank you, the motion's been made. Do I have a second?
This is Deanna, seconded.
Thank you, motion has been made and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Okay, are there any opposed? Please say so now. Okay, the minutes stand approved as submitted. The next action item is Title VI plan updates. And who is handling that today? Is that Asia?
Yeah, that's me.
Are you ready to share your screen or how are we handling this?
Can everyone see that? Okay. Hi everyone. So I'm just gonna briefly explain the updates to the Title VI plan and then at the end of that, ask for an endorsement. So there are three important additions to the Title VI plan. The first, we added an updated GDOT concurrence letter that was sent to us in January. We also added Chinese and Vietnamese translated complaint forms and notices. And we will also be adding the minutes from the February 23rd, 2022 Core MPO meeting minutes to the plan. So the Title VI plan with the updates I just discussed, it is attached to this agenda so you can review and see those changes for yourself. And with that being said, we are asking for a motion to endorse the updates to the Title VI plan.
Okay, and that concludes your presentation, correct?
Yes.
So were there any questions, comments, or feedbacks for Asia? Hearing none, can I get a motion to endorse? And the motion would be to endorse the changes to the Title VI plan, rather the updates to the Core MPO board. Okay, one more request. Can I get a motion to endorse?
So moved, Tom Caiafa.
Thanks, Tom. Motion's been made. Can I get a second?
Jim Ayala.
Kayla, I'll second.
Second.
I think Jim was first, but the important thing is we got a second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Okay, are there any opposed? Please signify by speaking now. Okay, hearing none opposed, the motion passes. And let's see. The next action item is the February 22nd amendments to the fiscal year 2021 to 2024 TIP, and that's going to be Alicia.
Thank you. Okay, can everyone see my screen?
Yes, we can.
All right, thank you. Okay, so the MPO received one TIP amendment request in January. So the staff report is going to outline the proposed amendment for the fiscal year 2021 through 2024 TIP, which is the MPO's current short range planning document. The one TIP amendment request we had came in from Savannah Airport Commission. This request was to add a project scoping phase in fiscal year 2022 for the I-95 at Airways Avenue, Pooler Parkway interchange. And like I said, we just have one amendment, and so this is it. So the staff is recommending to the committee to endorse the February 2022 TIP amendment. Are there any questions?
Just one, Leon. Who's going to sponsor the project?
Leon, Jim Ayala from the airport. We're currently talking with GDOT to sponsor it. We had a call with them yesterday, so we're working with them, and we're going to get that all ironed out. So we're going to work with GDOT here.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, were there any further questions or comments for Alicia on the proposed TIP amendments? Hearing none, can I get a motion to endorse the proposed TIP amendments to the core MPO board next week?
Jim Ayala.
So moved.
Okay, I heard Jim and I heard Leon. So can I interpret that as a motion and a second? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 At least a couple of ayes.
Aye.
Excellent. Is anyone opposed? Please speak now. Hearing none opposed, motion passes. The next item on the agenda is endorsement of the proposed fiscal year 2023 Unified Planning Work Program. I'm going to ask if I can share my screen because I have a PowerPoint. And it gave me no control over which screen. So is anyone seeing a screen, or are you looking at an FTA website, or are you looking at a slide?
FTA website.
Okay, let me just slide the slide over. That seems to be the easiest way. Can everyone see the presentation now? Oh, and I neglected to update the date because I built this on last time, but just pretend it's February on the cover page and we'll be fine. Okay, the draft fiscal year 2023 Unified Planning Work Program is the proposed core MPO staff work program for fiscal year 2023 that begins July 1st. Details the staff budget and work projects to support the federally mandated 3C, continuing comprehensive and cooperative transportation planning process. It addresses funding, staff work, and the budget allocation among the specific work tasks. The draft Unified Planning Work program is funded by two primary formula sources, one being the FHWAPL funds, which are allocated by formula through Georgia DOT. Also, the FDA Section 5303 formula grant funds that come to us, again, through GDOT from FTA. Both grants require 20% local match. This is covered by MPO membership dues. In the case of the 5303 grant, GDOT is picking up half of the local match in support of the MPO, for which we are very appreciative. The funds can only be used for planning, and any funds not spent are forfeited at the end of the year. A few years ago, five or six, perhaps, the rules were changed in Georgia, and unless you're Atlanta, you're no longer allowed to roll your planning funds from one year to the next, which we sometimes used to do to bank them for larger projects. Instead, there's another process that I'll touch on in a few minutes. The formula planning funds are really, to be honest, just a guess at this point. We have assumed level funding with fiscal year 2022. With reauthorization having passed in the fall, actually the month after the first draft of the work program was written, we do expect funding levels to increase in time, pending results of the census. However, since reauthorization, we have been operating at the federal level under a continuing resolution. It's the last time I checked in on that. They were preparing, I guess, to pass another continuing resolution that would take us into the middle of March, if not to the end of the year. So regardless of what you've heard about a lot of the increased funding with reauthorization, a lot of it is pending, I guess, approval of a full federal budget. So we are working with these numbers. We hope they will increase. Ultimately, they will, providing our urbanized share doesn't slip too much within the state of Georgia, but this is what we have to work with for now. We also tap into discretionary PL funds. The planning fund, the MPO planning funds are allocated by formula. However, when they go unused at the end of the year, they are now appropriated by the state and pooled, and we have a chance twice a year to apply for those funds on a discretionary basis. It's competitive each spring and each fall. So the next meeting will be the last Monday of March to divvy up funds on a request basis. The plans and studies must take place in, they must be in the UPWP. The planning activities need to take place in the MPO area. And the prioritization criteria tend to favor required MPO planning products. Now, having said that, it's my observation that in the state of Georgia, we are awarding as many of these projects to non-required planning studies as to planning studies. So there really is no limit on that per se. The applications are pre-screened by Georgia DOT and Federal Highway Administration staff, which means they may be pulled from the list of submitted projects before the selection committee sees them, if there's some reason that, in the opinion of GDOT or Federal Highway, that those requests should not move forward. The awards are then reviewed, and normally approved by the PL Funds Review Committee, and we require 20% local match that's typically provided by the local project sponsor. In addition, there's a small amount of additional Section 5303 funds each year that are not allocated under the statewide formula. We do have opportunities, if we do it early enough, say in the fall, to request a little bit of the limited discretionary FTA Section 5303 funds for studies that are in the UPWP. And we've previously assisted CAT by pulling down some of those funds to help with their software purchase. Again, 20% local match required. Just a quick rundown of recent discretionary PL and 5303 awards. We've been pretty successful in the last 5 years or so securing discretionary planning funds. Most recently for the MPO freight plan update and the urban flooding model and planning tools, those new planning studies are in the procurement process right now. We're getting ready to wrap up the 2021 discretionary planning awards for the State Route 21 Access Management Study and State Route 307 Corridor Study. By the next time this committee meets, those studies, we do expect those studies to be completed. And going a little bit further back, we also had the two major interchange studies we did back in 2018. And just to show that nothing is ever final and until it's final, we are still working with the airport to resolve, I guess, some outstanding issues with the scope and initiate the scoping phase for the I-95 Airways Avenue interchange. So we still have a hand in that as well. The development process is longer than you might imagine. It began really with defining the transit planning tasks as far back as April of last year when we approved the current year work program. We issued a call for plans and studies in September of 2021. These are typically funded through the discretionary PL funds, and at that time we received four requests from CAT. Those are listed in the unfunded section of the UPWP. Then staff developed the first draft of the work program beginning in October and wrapping up in early November. The FTA Section 5303 grant application was submitted by Alicia in early December of 2021. The Core MPO Board and Advisory Committees reviewed the draft and endorsed it in December of 2023. At that time, we submitted the draft work program to Federal Highway Administration and GDOT for review and comments on December 15th. We received comments from Federal Highway on January 18th, followed by GDOT comments on January 19th. There were quite a few comments. They are included in Appendix C of the document that is attached to your agenda if you would like to peruse them. They are addressed throughout the revised UPWP document that is attached. I believe we're up to version 2.2 at this time. Just to give you a sense of some of the comments, there were several things that happened after the draft was actually written that we were asked to incorporate. One was the 2021 planning emphasis areas. We received those in early January, I want to say around January 4th, there was a letter that went out to Federal Highway and FTA divisions on December 30th, asking them to reach out to the MPOs and implement these planning emphasis areas. So there is a discussion of the planning emphasis areas, and thankfully the activities that we have in the work program are supporting these planning emphasis areas. We'll be working further in the future to continue to implement the planning emphasis areas. It's a little difficult to make major changes once the draft is out. Unfortunately, we did not need to. Also, we were asked to incorporate a discussion of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, also known as IIJA or Bill for Bipartisan Infrastructure Legislation. So we have incorporated that as well. One thing I wanted to note, since we did touch on funding, one of the comments we received that was that we were directed by Federal Highway Administration not to pursue any additional discretionary PL funding for additional plans and studies during the year. So if nothing changes there, we probably will need to discuss further about whether we need to have a call for plans and studies in the fall. We have quite a list of unfunded ones accumulated in the UPWP, so we'll have to look at that and see if it makes sense to have another call that could perhaps be addressed in a future fiscal year. No the comments did not really result in any significant changes to the actual staff work priorities that were established with the draft. So next steps, we want to finalize UPWP this month. We're asking the advisory committees to review and endorse to the Core MPO board. We'll be asking for Core MPO board approval next week. Once we have that, we'll transmit the revised document to Federal Highway Administration and GDOT for additional review and final approval. Once Federal Highway Administration signs off on the revised document, then we'll be able to pursue our funding contracts for both the PL and the Section 5303 funds. We don't have a date for that, which is why I showed that in gray text, but we expect that to be completed by the end of June to have things lined up for the fiscal year. So just a quick review. Next year's staff work priorities will include the 2050 MTP update, the congestion management process update, which will be conducted really in tandem, the MPO freight plan update, which is a one of the special studies that we're doing this year with the discretionary PL funds. That's actually being sponsored by the MPO using funds that come through the MPO dues, since it's a area-wide plan. The urban regional and regional flooding model and analysis tools, and the 2020 census urban area delineation and MPO reapportionment. Just a quick explanation of that. We're expecting sometime in the spring, the latest I heard, that the census will release the new urban area data that will cause us to need to revisit most likely our MPO planning area. MPOs are expected to, historically MPOs have been expected rather to incorporate the census urbanized area and the areas expected to become urbanized in the following 20 years. So at a minimum, we'll need to look at what, and this time the census is really just releasing urban, not urbanized areas, but we'll have to look at that and see if it's necessary to make changes to the planning area. If that's the case, then we'll need to also look at the bylaws and see if we need to make changes there. So stay tuned for that. That will probably begin to play out during the summer. Quick run through of the staff work program. These are the major tasks: administration, public involvement, data collection, transit planning. Other than the emphasized projects, they don't change much from year to year. Member requested studies are the ones that are typically funded with discretionary PL. We have the MPO freight plan update, the urban and regional flooding model, and we have kind of an oddball since we had the CRISA funds last year, which were the COVID relief funds. We were able to award those to the US 80 corridor study, which I think was a really good opportunity. Since it's a multi-jurisdictional study, it can be a little bit difficult to coordinate multiple municipalities to participate in the same study and particularly the match. So I think that 100% federal funding available through CRISA was a good opportunity to get that study done on a regional basis. And the following is the special studies unfunded list, which has gotten pretty large, which is why I say we'll need to look at this later on, say in the late summer, and see if it makes sense, whether we need to have another call for plans and studies. Federal Highway has directed that we're not to apply for any funding this year, so it may not make sense unless there's an urgent need that arises that we need to address. So we'll further that conversation later on. And here's the hypothetical draft budget, assuming flat funding, as I mentioned earlier, subject to change. Are there any comments, discussion, questions? I'll be happy to answer. If there is no discussion, Again, the action we are requesting is endorsement of the draft fiscal year 2023 Unified Planning Work Program to the core MPO board for consideration at their meeting next week. Do I hear a motion? Please remember to state your name. We're hearing a bunch of noise. Could I ask who made the motion?
I did. Melanie Wilson.
Oh, thanks, Melanie. Helps to have a friend on the inside. Do I have a second?
Leon, a second.
Thanks, Leon. Okay, all motion has been properly made and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Okay, thank you. If anyone is opposed, please speak now. Hearing none opposed, motion passes. The next item on the agenda is under status reports. This is State Route 307 Corridor Study Status Report, and I believe we have Chris Marsengill from Kimley Horn ready to give that presentation. Chris, are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm ready.
Excellent.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. See if I can share my screen here. All right,
we can see it.
Okay. You have the presentation?
Yes, we do.
Excellent, very good. Well, again, my name is Chris Marsengill, and we came before you with a presentation on the status of the study back in early December. Since that time, we have developed and refined a number of recommendations for improvements along the project corridor. So we wanted to take a little of your time today to talk through some of those and maybe answer some questions that you might have. I know you've had this presentation in your packet for a week or so. I'm not sure if everybody's had an opportunity to review that, but we're glad to answer any questions related to this material. We want to talk a little bit about our findings, recap those. We want to talk about our study recommendations and then talk about where we're going from here. So just want to give you a brief overview of the recommendations and then highlight some of the community input that we received. And then we want to hear from you, of course. You've seen this slide before in an earlier presentation. We studied 27 individual intersections along the corridor. The corridor itself is 8.5 miles long. It begins at State Route 25, Ogeechee Road, and it ends at State Route 20. Yes.
Sorry to interrupt, but your slide is not advancing.
Uh-oh. Let's see. So you're seeing this screen?
We're seeing the cover, but it's probably important for them to see the map, right?
Yeah, so no change there.
Still seeing the cover here.
Did that change?
Mm-mm, no.
Okay, let me stop and reshare.
That's better.
Okay, and then when I advance, did it change?
Yes, it did.
Okay, great. We're back. So again, we studied 27 intersections, individual intersections along the corridor, and we broke this 8.5 mile long corridor into six segments. Again, it begins at State Route 25, Ogeechee Road, and the study ends at State Route 25, again, Ocean Highway at Georgia Ports Authority's Gate 4. So that's just a brief overview of the project itself. Here we've listed community engagement and stakeholder engagement to date. You can see we had five specific focus groups we met with to give folks an opportunity or to give stakeholders an opportunity to talk in smaller groups, which is sometimes helpful to getting input. We had a stakeholder advisory committee that we assembled for the project. Had two meetings with them. The first was on the 14th of October. And that was to talk about some of our preliminary findings. And then we did a follow-up meeting with them at the end of January, January 31st, to talk through the alternatives very close to the presentation that we're presenting to you guys today. As I mentioned, we had our last presentation with this group on the 9th of December. And prior to that, we held a public information meeting on the 7th of December and also launched an online survey concurrently with that POH so that we could extend the period over which the public could view the recommendations and make comments on those. Overall, our needs are to reduce conflicts between cars, trains, and freight trucks on the State Route 307 corridor. Interestingly, there is a pretty good mix, if you will, of vehicles at and around the 307 interchange with I-16. But obviously, as you get closer to the Georgia Ports Authority's Gate 4, that mixture shifts heavily towards trucks to the tune of about 50% of the traffic volume is, in fact, heavy trucks. So we cross a number of major freight corridors and commuter corridors along the course of this 8.5-mile long corridor. And there we identified a need, obviously, to separate some of those freight flows and commuter flows to better accommodate both, if you will. Obviously, there are some intersection improvements that we've identified along the corridor. And I say obviously because I suspect everybody on this call or on this committee has driven the corridor and knows some of the woes, especially up around State Route 21 and US 80. There's an existing raised median on the southern portion of the project from State Route 25, Ogeechee Road up to I-16. That has served well in reducing the number of conflicts and crashes in that segment. North of I-16, however, there is a flush median or a two-way left turn lane that extends up to Robert B. Miller before the raised median is reintroduced. That's resulting in a higher frequency of crashes between I-16 and the Robert B. Miller median area. So one of the needs that we've identified is an access management strategy to reduce the crash frequency. That would likely be in the form of a raised concrete median that would reduce the number of conflicts along the 8.5-mile long corridor. There's also a demand for transit and pedestrian accommodations along the corridor, as well as bicycle accommodations. We didn't see a lot of pedestrians and bicycles in the field, but during our coordination meetings with stakeholders, we identified with them a latent demand for transit, for one, and the idea that if there were better facilities for pedestrians and bicycles, they would likely use the corridor more frequently. So in terms of short-term recommendations, and we've covered this before, but we identify short-term recommendations as those that will be needed within the next 5 years. First is a list of intersection improvements, a signalization at Distribution Drive. That's one of the intersections that's suffering during the peaks. Also some interim auxiliary lane improvements at State Route 26, US 80. There are some things that we can do to that intersection, such as dual left turn lanes on all four approaches to get more life out of that intersection and its current configuration. But there's also a long-term solution for that intersection, and we'll talk more about that in a moment. And then corridor signal retiming throughout the corridor. The idea here being optimizing signal timing, implementing some flashing yellow arrow signal heads at some locations and introducing protected permissive phasing instead of just the permissive phasing for left turns at a number of locations. I mentioned access control as in terms of a raised median, but that would actually be a long-term recommendation to implement the raised median. But in the meantime, or in the short term, we can plan for its implementation as developments are being approved along the corridor. Driveways should be set up with the understanding that there will be a raised median in the future, such that you're not taking away access in the future. So by implementing innovative intersections through development, the internal operations of sites are configured recognizing that you may only have a right in, right out. So they would have to be considering alternative or maybe secondary ingress and egress on those properties. And then also a strategy to expand transit along the State Route 307 corridor. Interestingly, the corridor is not within the transit district. That's probably not something we can solve as a short-term problem, but it's something that we need to start talking about and planning for. And there may need to be an actual transit study prepared for the corridor to determine where that demand really is and whether or not transit expansion as a long-term project would be beneficial and sustainable. Long-term recommendations are a little longer list. We have some additional intersection improvements, and we also have some grade separations. So I'm going to go out of order a little bit just because I talked about US 80 a moment ago. In the long-term scenario, we identified a need for an interchange at US 80 and State Route 307. I didn't really see that one coming, but it was very much apparent in the numbers and in the modeling that we did. One that was no surprise was State Route 21, the need for an interchange where Dean Forest State Route 307 crosses State Route 21. And I'll show you in a moment an idea that we have for that location where State Route 307 would actually be elevated over the CSX rail line as well as State Route 21. The intersection at the very beginning of the project, State Route 25 at Ogeechee Road, has some capacity issues and some operational issues that we would like to correct. So we're recommending that as a long-term project. And then a grade separation of State Route 307 over the Norfolk Southern Railroad, which is just north of the US 80 intersection, or what will be an interchange in the future. The access control project that would include adding a raised median. We would also include bike and pedestrian accommodations as we're changing that cross section, if you will. When you're implementing the raised median, there will be a need to widen some on the outside. And at that time, we would go ahead and implement the pedestrian facilities to avoid having to come back and do that later. And then there would be some standalone ped and bike facilities. As I mentioned, south of I-16, the cross section or the roadway typical section includes a raised median today. Also, there is an existing sidewalk that extends from the I-16 interchange down to Landfill Road. One of our long-term pedestrian and bicycle recommendations would be to extend the pedestrian facilities all the way to 25, and that would include a sidewalk on one side and a bike lane on the other side, which would match the new DDI interchange that's under construction today. It includes both shared use path and a sidewalk. So we would basically be matching that. And then we would add sidewalks along State Route 307, north of the State Route 21 intersection to connect State Route 21 and State Route 25 with pedestrian facilities. And then finally, the transit expansion, implementation of a transit expansion would be one of our long-term recommendations. So before I jump to the graphics, any questions about any of the recommendations at this point that I could maybe answer?
Chris, this is Jamie. The bicycle stuff, I mean, I understand it in a lot of areas. It just seems dangerous in this vicinity. But if, y'all know better than I know how to design it better than I, but this doesn't seem like there's the space for that in a safe way. But like I said, that's just my sentiment. And y'all are the experts.
All right. Thanks, Jamie. I appreciate your comments. And you're right. As it sits today, there are likely bicycles and pedestrians that are avoiding the corridor because they don't feel safe walking on the shoulder. There's no accommodations for them. Bikes and pedestrian facilities are part of the MPO's non-motorized transportation plan. And again, we did get some feedback from some of the stakeholders that that there is that latent demand out there. So if we implement it, and again, these are recommendations, if it's implemented, Jamie, to your point, there would be dedicated facilities as illustrated on this raised median typical section. Hopefully that slide advanced. And here you can see we have a shared use path that's separated from travel by a curb and gutter. And then on the east side, a dedicated sidewalk, which is separated by a 6-foot grass strip and a curb similar to the way the shared use path is separated. As I mentioned, in order to implement this raised median, it would require some widening on the outside. And because we're disturbing that outside shoulder, that would be the appropriate time to make whatever improvements need to be made to the shoulders and implement the pedestrian and bicycle facilities if deemed feasible. That's a long answer to fairly short comment question.
I mean, it's just that the 307 from 16 to our gate is never going to be any less busy. It'll only be exponentially more busy. And, you know, even with that kind of design, I can't fathom it being the safest place to ride bikes. And I know it's not riding bikes, horseplay, it's just trying to get with a meaningful purpose from point A to point B. I just seem like there'd be other routes crossing the same, you know, east, west, or north, south distances that would be a better opportunity.
That's a good point. Thank you, Jamie. All right. Any other questions, or we'll move forward. All right. So I mentioned
This is Kayla with Bike Walk Savannah. I just wanted to say thank you for actually including that multi-use path. This has been a highly prioritized ask. And related to the comment about possibly moving it to a different facility, this is really the only north-south facility in the area. If you look at this segment of 307, you know, ideally we'd be able to put something kind of in between, but there's really no other corridors that this would fit on. So, you know, not at least within the immediate vicinity. So I think that this is a welcome addition, and I look forward to seeing it happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Kayla. All right, so I mentioned an interchange at US 80 or State Route 26. So we developed a concept or an idea for what that might look like. And in this slide, State Route 307 is running from left of screen to right side of screen, and US 80 or State Route 26 is north-south, or up, I'm sorry, is bottom of screen to top of screen. So in this, with this configuration, which is known as a single point urban interchange, US 80 would fly over 307. So we would elevate US 80 up onto bridge structure, and then back down. These ramps from US 80 would be used to access State Route 307. This obviously is access to the westbound 80, and this would be access to eastbound. This is a very tight interchange configuration. Traditional diamond interchange would require ramps extending out to a point here and likely here with about 1,000 feet of separation between the two.
We can't see your cursor if you're pointing to it.
I'm sorry.
So you might want to just verbally mention that. That's better.
So I thought I'd click that on. Sorry. So you can see the ramps tying in from US 80, tying into State Route 307. So this would be your off ramp, and this would be an on ramp. And then in the opposite direction, this is the off ramp. And then this is the opposing on ramp. This is a single point urban interchange. A traditional diamond interchange would require a ramp tie in approximately here and somewhere over here, with about 1,000 feet between the two intersections, the two ramp intersections. So these ramps would then come out much further than this tighter configuration that we've shown with the single point urban interchange. Now, this again is an idea for what this might look like. The configuration would need to be vetted, of course, through the concept development process before a preferred alternative is selected. But we did want to draw a version such that we could cost a potential interchange solution, and then just to get a feel for what the impacts might be. In that regard, we developed a layout of the 8.5 mile long corridor from beginning to end, so that we again could use that to help develop cost of these recommendations, and then again to evaluate impacts. Any questions about the single point interchange or a potential interchange at this location? Hearing none. This is just north of the state route, I'm sorry, the US 80 State Route 26 interchange. This is Norfolk Southern's rail that parallels Robert B. Miller Road. This is a pretty heavily trafficked rail corridor, and we identified the need to elevate State Route 307 over the railroad on bridge structure, and then tie it back down at this existing commercial driveway at Westport. There would be no need to move or shift Robert B. Miller with the implementation of a grade separation here. However, this leg of Bourne Avenue is a little too close still, so we took up the opportunity to realign Bourne Avenue to form a four-way intersection with the commercial driveway to Westport, and that also, obviously, the primary goal of that was to eliminate the grade differential here, and then what is an odd intersection configuration. You notice when pulling it back, we were able to improve the approach to the intersection. All right, this is the State Route 21 at State Route 307 intersection. We have developed an interchange alternative for this as well. As I mentioned earlier, State Route 307 would be raised and elevated over the CSX rail crossing, and it would stay on bridge structure until we cross State Route 21. And then would be again a transition back down and tie in at grade at an existing intersection. And unfortunately, I don't have the name of this road labeled, but there is an existing intersection here. So we would tie it back down at this intersection. And then we would take advantage of this intersection to create our ramps. So if you wanted to access 307 from the south, you would go under 307, take a right onto the ramp, and then a right or a left onto 307. So the signal operation that's here today would be replaced with signals at this location, and this location, with much simpler signalized operations. To access 307 from the north, you'd make a left onto this quadrant roadway, and then a left or a right at this location. Interestingly, the signal operations worked better when this ramp was a one-way ramp. So the purpose of this ramp is to get eastbound traffic to northbound or southbound State Route 21.
You're going to have to explain that so many times going forward with advances, because people are going to want to know, why can't a northbound just turn onto the first one?
Right.
Yeah, I want to ask that right now.
Yeah, we anticipated a weave between here and the intersection at Jimmy DeLoach. So there'll be a number of vehicles that want to turn right and then cross all of these lanes of traffic to get into that left turn lane. We would prefer that they make a left instead and be in the inside lane. And it also took a phase out of the signal. So you don't have to dedicate as much time to the side road operations, and you can give more time to the State Route 307 through movements. And then, you know, something you can't really see here, but there's some signing issues too that have to be dealt with. And this was a little simpler configuration to sign. Good question though.
You do still have two lanes in both directions to the north of this new configuration, don't you? I mean, I see that big orange median, but that's not a single lane.
That's right. So it's two lanes continuing to the north and coming from the north.
All right. So I'm going to keep on my dumb questions and statements, but you got an Applebee's that has been closed for several years now. And I know that motel is extended stay is used with some frequency, but there's no way to bring that signalized intersection west closer to that overpass and just have some kind of merge lane so that you're coming and just making a right-hand turn to go north?
So you're talking about making this two-way?
No, I mean, that would be fine too, but I'm saying north of where Mavis is, you got a Sonic, or excuse me, west of Mavis, you have a Sonic and then an Applebee's that's, like I say, been closed forever.
Right.
Well, a long time. But you would not be better off getting where your red dot is and having a lane coming to merge if you're going north?
Well, that of course, that would require taking all of these properties. And keep in mind that this 307 is elevated at this point in order to get over.
Yeah, so you got to get a point
too. So by picking this location, we were able to get the grade back down such that we don't have high fills on either side of the roadway. And again, this is an idea of what it could look like. A preferred alternative would have to be identified through the concept development process. The biggest constraint here, and I think we're all aware of it, is the proximity of this parallel CSX crossing to this intersection.
Oh yeah.
So you're really limited as to what you can do on this side. Everything has to be on the east side, and it's a little non-traditional, but quadrant roadways are a new tool that more and more states are using when they're faced with these kinds of issues, or with these kinds of constraints, I should say. Anything else on this funky one?
I think Circle K should love it.
Well, they would have to lose this driveway, keep in mind.
Yeah.
and likely this one as well. So they might not love us too much, but they, you know, we plan for a new access to the back, and they would have to reconfigure some of their truck parking. But yeah, I don't think it would be too terrible for this parcel. All right. So next steps. This presentation to you guys today is a big step in wrapping up our final report. We've got a few comments back from MPC staff and from Chatham County staff, and we've since we put these recommendations together, we've had a follow-up meeting with Air National Guard and got some great input from them, which helped with phasing some of our projects or some of our recommendations. So after today, we want to take the comments from you guys and any concerns that you've identified and respond to those, refine our recommendations, and then we'll be making a presentation to the MPO board on the 23rd. We suspect maybe another round of refinement prior to submitting the final report the first week of March. And that's all I have. I've probably taken a little more of your time than Mark intended, but I think it's time well spent, and I appreciate your time.
I think I said 20 minutes. We probably went closer to 25 or 27, but I think it was time well spent. Are there any further questions or comments for Chris?
I just have one quick one, Leon. What is the cost associated with all this? Is there a rough order of magnitude of what we're looking at from a cost standpoint when it comes to the short-term versus long-range projects?
I don't know that we've totaled it by short-term and long-term. We can do that. We actually prepared project pages for each of these recommendations, Leon, with cost estimates and project descriptions. So very much like the project pages that the MPC currently uses to program projects, we have one of those for each of these. I can go through and tally up the short-term and long-term. Unless, Rhodes, you have that. Well, you're muted, but you could text it to me. If you had that available, I just don't think we've tallied it in those groupings. But I'll get it to you.
Yeah, Chris, I'll do that real quick for you.
Okay.
Okay, are there any further questions or comments for Chris from the attendees? Hearing none, we'll move on to the information reports. Thank you, Chris. And the first on the agenda is the GDOT project status report. Is Katie going to, Katie, are you going to be giving that report?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, on pre-construction, numbers 1 and 2, the bridge replacements on State Route 25 at Savannah River and Middle River. The notice to proceed number 1 has been received and the preliminary design is underway. NTP number 2 is anticipated in March, and that's to begin the final design activities. Number 3, safety improvements on State Route 204 from State Route 21 to Rio Road continues toward PFPR. Number 4, I-16 at Chatham Parkway held FFPR on February 15th and continues on schedule, anticipating let in September. Number 5 and 6, the widening on State Route 404 spur US 17 with bridge replacement at Back River continues in concept. Number 7, the bridge replacement at Bull River, environmental and preliminary design is ongoing. The borings are expected throughout April and PFPR request is anticipated in August. Number 8, Lazaretto Creek Bridge is ongoing, environmental and right-of-way plans are being developed. Number 9, widening on Ogeechee from I-516 Victory Drive right-of-way is ongoing. The revisions are being processed. For our active projects, they're all progressing as scheduled. Line 9, the widening and reconstruction on Brampton, this project let on January 21st. It was awarded to the lowest bidder. With a 120-day deferral for right-of-way. And just for information, I added Brian and Effingham since there were some questions last time. Do you have any questions?
Oh, sorry. Okay. I was going to ask if anyone had any questions for GDOT on the project status. Okay, hearing none, we'll move on. Thank you very much, Katie.
Thank you.
Next report is Chatham County Project Status Update. Who will be giving that?
I'll be giving that. It's Deanna, sorry. As far as project updates, the only status changes, we have kickoff meetings for Chevis Road improvements and Girard Avenue improvements on next week, Tuesday and Wednesday next week. And construction has started for the Robert McCorkle bike trail recently. So that is currently ongoing. And the 2021 resurfacing project was recently bid. So that will also be going to construction soon. And so that's all the updates I have for you all. Are there any questions about any of the projects?
Okay, again, any questions for Deanna on Chatham County projects? And hearing none, we'll move on. The next item is the City of Savannah Project Status Report. And let's see who is on the call. Is Barry, Barry, are you giving that report?
Yes, I can give it.
Okay, thank you.
No problem. The first up is the Lessons Avenue widening project. The mayor has signed the construction agreement, and we're just waiting on a pre-construction meeting date. Work is anticipated to begin second quarter of this year. Next item is the traffic control center, Department of Transportation, traffic operations staff. Just indicated that they will not be able to perform the design build aspect of the project. That responsibility will be on the city. The city needs to know if they can move forward with procurement and finalize expenditure of funds from GDOT. The next item is the Duran project. Federal Highway Administration requested additional information regarding the environmental justice participation. GDOT's Office of Environmental Services and Federal Highway have met to discuss public involvement and trying to come up with a schedule to move forward. And we hope to have a resolution by the TCC meeting, which I guess was this meeting. We have no update as of yet on, I guess, a path forward, but when one is available, we will provide the update. The next one is the Truman Linear Trail. Right-of-way authorization phase was approved. City of Savannah Real Estate Services is working on the required appraisals for the parcels on the project. The City of Savannah has requested that GDOT plan to move forward or to move the Z301 funds to FY23 due to the extended time required to add the right-of-way phase to the project. Design is almost complete, and the construction phase should be authorized by the end of 2022. Are there any questions?
Barry, I do have a question. This is Waikota. For the traffic control center, currently, I think you have PE right-of-way construction program in fiscal 2022. Mm-hmm. That ends on June 30th. So if you cannot make that deadline, you need to move the funds to fiscal 2023. So you start to coordinate with GDOT, probably send a request letter similar to the Truman Linear Park Trail Phase 2B, send a letter to allow them to ask them to allow you to move the funds to next fiscal year. For the Truman Linear Park Trail Phase 2B, remember, you also have CRESA funds program in fiscal 2022. So you need to coordinate with GDOT to allow you to move the CRESA funds to fiscal 2023 as well.
Right. And I think Nick Depley, who's the project manager, is aware of that, and he's working on it.
Yeah, because if we need to process that, that probably will be April. So. Yeah, try to make that happen.
Okay, I'll definitely relay the message.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Are there any further questions for Barry, City of Savannah Projects? Okay, thank you, Barry. Hearing none, we'll move on to the Chatham Area Transit Project Status Report. And Shalanda, are you giving that report?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, whenever you're ready. We can see your screen.
Good afternoon. There has been no change on the status of the paratransit vehicles. There continues to be a manufacturing delay that's kind of out of our control, so we are working to try to get this resolved. The three diesel bus replacements, we are expected to receive them in June of 2023. That is, if there are no further delays in the production of those buses. The ITS clever devices, that is on track. Soft completion date is still correct of spring of 2022, and we think around April, early April, that we will be able to have that completed. So we're very excited about that. The ferry belt maintenance and facility dock project, it continues. We think that we've made a little bit more headway on this. We're working with FTA to kind of get this escalated. So I should have an update by the next meeting that we've had some more progress on that project. For the facility rehab at Cat Central, that is on track to begin in spring of 2022. And we're thinking around late March, early April to have that completed. And it should only take 3 months. So we're on target to have it completed by June. Bus wash and facility upgrade, contract has been executed. It is in the preliminary design status. Again, the target date, spring of 2022. And our support vehicles, all vehicles are finally in and they've been delivered. Are there any questions?
Okay, anyone have any questions for Shalonda on Chattamary Transit projects? Going once, going twice, hearing none. Thank you, Shalonda. We'll move on to LATS, which is Low Country Area Transportation Study Project Status Update. Who is giving that? Do we have someone from LATS?
Is it Stephanie here?
Is Stephanie okay. Here?
Yes, Stephanie is not here. So if you want to, but she did send in the status report over here. So it's attached to the agenda.
Right. Their main project remains the US 17 widening project, which has an explanation at the top of the page here. If anyone has any questions, we could take them and forward them to Stephanie and get back to you. Otherwise, we'll just accept the status report as submitted. Very good. So moving on. The last item that we have under information reports is the TIP project tracking. And Waikota, I believe that's your item, correct?
Yeah, we did send in the request for the project responses to update their projects and to update the project status with the program, the funds of CRESA Z301, Z230. We got all the updates from Chatham County, City of Savannah, and CAT, and thank you very much, and GDOT. The only one that I had some question was the CRESA funds for Pooler. But
so the US 80 study?
Yeah, US 80 study. So okay.
We require the award recipients make regular status reports to the TCC. So that's what Waikota is referring to, project that I think, when was that award? Was that at December meeting?
December, Waikota? Yes.
December, okay.
Yeah, I think Alicia reminded me that when City of Savannah sent me some information, they might have included some information for the Pooler project, but I didn't get any response from Leon. So if I send a request, Leon, you can just probably just provide that information directly to me, so you don't have to go through a City of Savannah. But if you want to like provide an update on that project, that will be helpful. US 80 corridor.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm unfortunately in a noisy place, but I thought I'd send those over to you guys, but irrespective, probably next month. We've got the package for the advertisements for the study about ready to go out. So those should go out next month so that we can have something worked out, have somebody on board before the end of the fiscal year.
So you already have a draft RFP. Can you share that with us?
Yes, I will.
Okay. Yeah, so we just want to make sure that we are making progress so that GLAD can authorize the funds.
Okay, was there anything else, Waikota?
No, I just, when do you expect to like send us the RFP draft? Did you lose Leon? Yeah. Leon, when do you expect to send us a draft RFP? No, he lost his connection.
Well, maybe you can follow up with him offline on that.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. Was there anything else that you needed to report about the TIP projects tracking, or were you done?
Another thing that is, we were trying to work with CAD to figure out to match the FHWA funds with the flexed FTA funds. So that's why when you see this updated table, actually Alicia was updating this table, and she added in the federal match required local match, normally like 20%, but CAD actually have some additional match. So we added that information in, and then the total amount. So we were trying to sort out, because there are some discrepancies between the flexed funds, between the FHWA amount and the FTA amount. So we were trying to match up between those two. So we're just still working with CAD on this. So if you see this, we added several columns over here just for that reason. Other than that, that's it.
Okay, it's a work in progress.
Yes.
Okay, any last call questions or comments for Waikota on the TIP project tracking? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to notices. Please to announce the next Core MPO TCC committee meeting will be April 14th at 2 p.m. The only other items attached to the agenda are information on notable presentations from webinars, workshops, and conferences. This is just information that staff has come across that we found of interest and wanted to share with the committee, and we'll let you enjoy that at your leisure. If there is no further business for the TCC, going once, going twice, I will declare the meeting adjourned. Thank you, everybody, for your time.